This is Ozarks at Large for Friday, March 23rd, 2012. I'm Kyle Callums.
And I'm Antoinette Grajeda. In just a moment, the president comes to Oklahoma.
And then we take a look into the future with a preview of May's Artisphere Festival and the Fayetteville Roots Festival that takes place this summer.
The 35th annual Hog Eye Marathon will be held on Sunday, April 15th, starting at 7:30 a.m. in Fayetteville. This event will include a full and half marathon, 5K run, a four-person relay, kids marathon, and more. Information, including registration and volunteer forms, are available on the web at hogeyemarathon.com.
Yesterday, President Obama made his first trip to our neighbors to the west, Oklahoma, since taking up residency in the White House. He visited the small town of Cushing, Oklahoma. It's a small town that's directly in the middle of oil country. Ben Allen of our newest content partner, KOSU, was there, and he has this report.
Earlier this year, the Obama administration delayed a decision on the Keystone XL pipeline. It would cross the U.S.-Canada border, bringing hundreds of thousands of barrels of oil into Cushing. Republican critics pounced, saying he's costing the state and the country jobs.
So today, I've come to Cushing, an oil town.
He didn't make the trip to the small town where the population could probably fit in a couple oil tanks to just offer talking points, though. Instead, President Obama announced a plan to get the problem at Cushing under control.
And today, I'm directing my administration to cut through the red tape, break through the bureaucratic hurdles, and make this project a priority, to go ahead and get it done.
That means approving the southern part of Keystone XL from Cushing to refineries in Texas. That, along with the coming reversal of the Seaway pipeline, could at least keep those tanks from overfilling. Tanks are sprouting from the ground as oil companies scramble to increase capacity there. And that's oil that should be going into people's cars.
So this will really help the market in having this bottleneck be somewhat resolved by having both of these pipelines out there. That should be a big help.
Rayola Doer is a senior economic advisor at the American Petroleum Institute, a Washington-based industry group. She says the move could bring gas prices down because it's introducing a whole new supply to the market. Even so, some at the speech only gave it tepid applause.
I'm hoping he eventually approves the Keystone, XL Keystone pipeline, and I think he will. He's waiting for that second proposal to come in, and sure he will. He sees all this pipe out here. He's got to approve it. It's 42 miles of pipe.
Marilyn Duff isn't an Obama supporter. Her main focus is oil. After all, she's a resident of Cushing. Salar Fayazi already knows who's getting a check on his November ballot, President Obama. But he knows enough to see why the president is fast-tracking the lower part of Keystone XL.
It's kind of hard to win over this state, and just in general, with the past, with the histories of the past, or the views of the past. But, I mean, it's good that he's making an effort, for sure. I think people will respect that.
Fayazi from Oklahoma City sported a sharp blazer and a smile when asked about the president.
I'm particularly for alternative energy, but I think for the president, you know, I know this. It's limited resources and everything like that, but for the present, it's kind of something we need to do. So,
in other words, it's politics. And that's the thing. Even with the announcement, the president got respectful applause, but never overwhelming. There were the occasional outbursts, including someone who yelled out, "I love you, Mr. President," as he took the stage. But those were the outliers. Take one of the volunteers, Nathan Cochran. When I asked him who he supported, he whipped out a wry grin.
Let's just say I love seeing the President of the United States here today. So,
President Obama didn't win a single county in Oklahoma in 2008, and he aimed the speech beyond the so-called reddest state in the country. There wasn't a single mention of natural gas in the state home to two companies sending lots of money after that resource. After proclaiming the permitting process will be as quick as possible for the oil pipeline, he pivoted.
If I put a oil rig on the South Lawn, if we had one right next to the Washington Monument, even if we drilled every little bit of this great country of ours, we'd still have to buy the rest of our needs from someplace else if we keep on using the same amount of energy, the same amount of oil.
So in what he called the oil capital of the country, President Obama started listing off other options.
Producing more biofuels, which can be great for our farmers and great for rural economies. It means more fuel-efficient cars. It means more solar power. It means more wind power.
Again, natural gas got passed by. When so many people cashed checks thanks to that resource, maybe tepid applause was all he could expect. In Cushing, Oklahoma, I'm Ben Allen.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Ismet Grajeda.
The third ever Artisphere is approaching. Jody Beznoska, Vice President of Communications at Walton Arts Center, is back with us today. This is the third year for Artisphere.
Correct.
Do you really now have, not that you didn't have an idea of what it was, but is there something different about the third year than the first or second?
I think so. I think we feel, you know, Artisphere in its first year sort of, it was a trial run. It was, okay, we're going to do this. Let's hope we can pull it off. And we did, and it was fantastic. But it was sort of like the train had left the station and we were chasing after it.
Mm-hmm.
then last year, the second year, we maybe had our fingers on the end of the train. You know, we knew a little more. We had planned a little better. But last year was the first year we introduced the Festival Orchestra, right, which was a major project. And it couldn't have been more successful. So this year I feel like we're a little more solid. We've planned ahead a little bit more. We know the lineup earlier. And we're ready to go.
And the orchestra will be back.
Yes, it will. We're very excited for that. It'll actually be Artisphere sort of, for those of you who don't know, Artisphere is an arts and nature festival that also has a strong theme of sustainability. And we're one of the only, if not the only, festival in the country that explores how art, nature, and sustainability work together. This year, we have two sections. We have a May portion of the Artisphere programming, and we have a June portion.
Okay.
And the orchestra will be our feature during the June programming. But it's this wonderful mix of, you know, all different kinds of art forms, all tied into a discussion about nature and sustainability and living in the world. So it's really fantastic.
Tickets are on sale.
They are. They went on sale last week. The good thing, though, about Artisphere is that most of Artisphere is free. Mm-hmm. And many events you don't even need a ticket. But there are some events that I would recommend you get tickets for, and we can quickly go through those if you'd like.
Let's go over some highlights.
Does that work? Okay.
Yeah.
So the kickoff for the festival is May 3rd. That's the first Thursday of May. There will be activities going on with First Thursday up in the Fayetteville Square. We'll be up there with a booth and some stuff going on. And then we'll also have things happening down at Walton Arts Center. We'll be opening a new gallery exhibition called Structuring Nature. That is about artists, and it's featuring artists who sort of explore man's interaction with structure and nature.
Mm-hmm.
So structuring nature. So that will open on the 3rd, and then we will have live music at that reception with a Canadian fiddler virtuoso named April Virch, who is fantastic. And we will have the big news that night is we will have Michael Pollan, who is the author of Food Rules and In Defense of Food and The Omnivore's Dilemma. He will be a featured lecturer that night. So that's a pretty big deal. We're very excited for that. That is, and of those three things I just described, the only thing you need a ticket for is Michael Pollan.
Okay.
So you can get those tickets right now. That same weekend, we will have all kinds of things going on. It's sort of our kickoff weekend. We'll be up at First Friday.
I was
going to
say,
We'll have two bands up there. We'll have April Virch up there, and then we'll also have a group called Daily and Vincent, who will be performing up there as part of First Friday. That First Friday is called Arts and Nature. So
there you go.
Funny how that happened.
Yeah.
That's Friday the 4th. And then on the 5th and the 6th, one of the signature events of Artisphere that has been with us since the very beginning is the Trail Mix Concert Tour. For the last 2 years, it's been along the Lake Fayetteville trails.
You walk a half mile or mile or so, and there's a band.
There's a band. Actually, you could do 2 miles, and you could see as many as five stages. And it's just been fantastic. It's you get to hear this music in an environment that you would never hear otherwise. So we're bringing that back again this year, and we're actually expanding it, which this is one of my favorite things about this year's Artisphere, is we're going to do it in Fayetteville, and we're also going to do it in Bentonville.
Oh, very cool.
Are you
going
to do it on the Crystal Bridges?
On the Crystal Bridges trails, yeah. So on the 5th, which is Saturday, we'll be out on the Crystal Bridges trails, and then on the 6th, which is Sunday, we'll be in Fayetteville on the Fayetteville trails, and then we'll finish up with a free family concert at the Botanical Gardens after Trail Mix on the 6th.
Wow.
So
two
all
days,
kinds
you
of
go
things.
To both.
Yeah, you could do it all. The following weekend, we will have Diavolo Dance Theater here doing a piece, and it's called Fearful Symmetries. They're pretty cool. and weird.
Don't they, but, like, dance on walls and
do.
Things?
They do.
Okay.
Yeah.
Ithy and I were looking at that picture at the Wellness Center trying mm-hmm. to figure out what was happening.
Well, one of the reasons we love having them as part of Artisphere is this year's Artisphere, each year has a loose theme. This year's theme is this concept of sticks and stones, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. basically is how do we as humans, for lack of a better term, how do we interact with nature in our structures, in the things we build? And Fearful Symmetries is all about that. It's about how these dancers interact with these built structures. So pretty excited for that. Around the same time, we will welcome Patrick Doherty here, who I can't believe we're going to have this project. We've been planning this project for 3 years. Patrick is a stickwork artist. Mm-hmm. He builds giant sculptures out of sticks. He harvests them from the local forests, and then he builds these massive structures.
It's amazing what he's done.
It's amazing.
There's a really cool one he did in Savannah.
Mm-hmm.
And
He's done them all over the United States. I believe he's done some in Europe. And they're very different. He'll do some in the middle of a cornfield, mm-hmm. and then he'll do some on urban structures. And ours is going to be right in front of Tyson Plaza. So this will happen over the course of about 3 weeks where he'll build this. He'll have a group of maybe 10 to 20 local volunteers who work with him through the whole thing. And so you'll just be able to watch this grow on our plaza, and then it will stay up hopefully at least a year, maybe a little longer, until it needs to come down. So it's a real honor to have him. Lots of other things going on in May. We've got some theater with the Artist Laboratory Theater. We've got some children's theater, a show on May 19th called We Built This City, where we will have probably 1,000 cardboard boxes on our stage, and kids will be able to come in, and with music and guidance from a DJ and from a sort of narrator, they will build a city out of these cardboard boxes, and then they'll knock it down. And their parents can come too, and it's really...
Does a kid need a chaperone? I'll go.
I knew when I heard this.
Well, I'm all over this.
Well, yeah. The good news about this is if you can find a kid, it's $5 for the kid, and the adults are free.
So I may borrow one of
you may
my
have to
friend's
borrow someone's kid.
Child. Yeah.
Most definitely. And then in June, we will bring in the Festival Orchestra, and we will bring back the chamber music series in the chapels, which everyone loves. We'll bring small ensembles to
into
Thorncrown
too. I mean, if you're going to have a series that's about how structure,
yeah.
how
mm-hmm.
we, you've got to have something in Thorncrown.
Absolutely.
That's yeah.
The plan is to be in Thorncrown, Cooper Chapel in Bella Vista, mm-hmm. and here at St. Paul's in Fayetteville. And what's great about this year, the musicians who are part of that chamber series are also the musicians who are part of the Artisphere Festival Orchestra. And the Festival Orchestra, it's such a monumental undertaking, I can't even really get my head around it. It's 80 of the best young musicians from the best music schools around the country, many of whom are playing first chair, mm-hmm. principal chairs in major orchestras like the New World and Philadelphia and St. Louis and all of these. They all come together for about 2 weeks, and they do a residency here. They basically live on Mount Sequoia mm-hmm. for these 2 weeks. They practice like crazy. They do all kinds of performances, you know, little things out in – they're going to be at the farmers markets. They're going to be in – we're going to – hopefully you're going to see them in places you don't usually see musicians. But then they're also – some of them are going to do these chamber concerts.
This is going to be fun.
It's mm-hmm. going to be fantastic. The orchestra is going to play in Siloam Springs this year.
Oh, great.
For the first time. Very excited about that. It'll be in Barrie at the Barrie Arts Center.
Is that on the JBU campus?
Yes.
Yes.
Yep.
Perfect.
And then we'll have a concert with the orchestra here as part of the 10 by 10 art series. And then we will actually end the whole Artisphere Festival with a major, major reception and party and orchestra concert at the, I think it's the 22nd of June.
You can go to waltonartscenter.org, but there's also a separate Artisphere.
Yes, artisphearfestival.org right now has the full listing of what's available. It has our preview video that's showing in the Malco Theaters right now, which is very fun for us. And it has information about all the different artists and the schedules of what they're going to be here. We also are going to be having all kinds of partnerships with our local restaurants. They're going to be offering special Artisphere drinks and farm-to-table events and all kinds of wonderful things. So it's all there. It's artisphearfestival.org, but you can also get to it by waltonartscenter.org, and you can also call the box office, 443-5600. They have all the info.
Thanks, Joey.
Thank you.
Most of the lineup for this year's edition of the Fayetteville Roots Festival has been announced. That happened Sunday night at a concert at Greenhouse Grill. Yesterday, Antoinette and I invited Brian Hembree and Jeremy Gothrop to the Furman Garner Performance Studio to talk about what's going to happen with this year's Roots Festival.
We wanted to remind people about the Roots Fest, and we've had a lot of people asking us about it and saying, you know, we can't wait for next year. And so we wanted to kind of put some news out there about the lineup, but also have a concert and kind of get people excited about this August and the third installment of the Fayetteville Roots Festival.
You got some great names involved. The headliner named this past weekend.
Yeah,
Grisman.
Yeah, one of our co-headliner for the fest, David Grisman, is coming, and we're really excited about him. He's a legend, the dog. You know, he's a great, great mandolin player. And, you know, he's been to Fayetteville in the past, but it's been a while, and we're really excited that he's going to be a part of the fest.
There's a lot of great musicians, so what do you look for when you start looking for people to fill out the lineup?
You know, Jeremy and I have just listened, and we kind of come to the table and we talk about artists that we've seen over the years or artists that we've heard, whether it be live or, you know, just via iTunes or a CD, and just start brainstorming, you know. And you know, we're trying to go for artists that you probably haven't seen in Fayetteville before, mm-hmm. artists that may be emerging. You know, obviously we'd love to have legends and headliners, but we also want to be about emerging artists that, you know, that kind of set the tone of, wow, I may not have heard of everyone on this bill, but the quality is strong. You know, we hope that people, you know, kind of trust us in that action.
Well, I remember, Jeremy, one of the first times, perhaps the first time we ever talked on the air about the Roots Festival, when it was somewhat in its infancy, and you said you hoped that within a few years there would just be this sort of understanding that, oh, if they're at the Roots Festival, even if I've never heard of them, then I trust these guys who put it together.
Indeed. I think this year the Roots concept isn't genre-specific as much as it's this umbrella of Roots music. So we have folk to a jazz fusion, to a little bit of bluegrass and singer-songwriters, and a little bit of alt country. So the Roots definition is far and wide, but it still falls under that umbrella.
The festival grew exponentially last year from the first year. Are we expecting another bit of growth this year?
Yeah, I mean, we've definitely gone, just in days, we're going from 3 to 4. Mm-hmm. So we went from 1 to 3 and now to 4. So that's definitely growth. The number of artists are going up. I think we had 30 total artists last year. We'll probably have 40 plus this year. We're expanding, you know, the number of venues. We're adding on a late night venue with George's Majestic Lounge on Friday and Saturday night. We're expanding the programming that we're doing at the Fayetteville Public Library and really going to have, you know, a workshop stage, so to speak, there all 4 days. So, yeah, definitely growth. But, you know, smart growth and growth within the bounds of what we're trying to do and trying to keep this an intimate urban festival so that it has a feel that, you know, the town is abuzz with the festival, but it's not necessarily all centered in one location.
Also, the first time we talked about this, you had some high concept ideas of community involvement, and we saw some of that. There were performances at the square during the farmers market. There were some kid specific, mm-hmm. concerts. More of that as well. More community activities as well as the music.
Absolutely. Not to mention the local food involvement.
Exactly.
Yes,
which
will definitely get stepped up this year. Last year we had. The three food vendors at the events were all sourcing with local food. So instead of the typical festival fare that we've discussed, you were getting locally sourced food in a festival model, which was fantastic, and people were just blown away by that. To see the menus where it was very much gourmet food with local ingredients abound. So that was nice. And all the artists really appreciate the fact that the food they're eating backstage or at the VIP party or the festivarian that's coming and getting some food at one of the vendors is getting the straight local food, which is very Fayetteville. Additional programming, yes. Events at the farmers market again this year, workshops at the Fayetteville Public Library, master classes. Brian?
Yeah, I mean, you know, and you talked about sitting down and listening to the music, and, you know, we definitely did that. But we also kind of booked with this idea in mind that we wanted folks that were interested not only in playing on stage, but getting involved in some way. So, for example, the Steel Wheels, who we've presented in town before, are coming back for the festival, and they're going to host a cycling event where they actually give a guided tour starting on Friday morning from the square, and then, you know, folks can go with them on a cycling event. So it's not only engaging with the artist as an audience member and while they're on stage, but engaging engaging with the artist in another environment as well. David Grisman's going to play a set as our Friday night headliner, but then also give a master class as well. You know, so those individuals that are actually interested in the mechanics of playing the mandolin or playing his style of music can learn from him. Bringing those types of elements into play, I think, is important. We kind of think of it as this is the three-legged stool of the festival. You've got the music side, which is always fabulous, but then you've got the local food side, and then there's the community engagement. And so we're hoping that that third leg of the stool is really kind of coming into play and coming into fruition this year.
What have you learned? I mean, it seems like this year, more than the previous two, you really have been working year-round. The concept has been firmed up. What have you learned since last August that you've applied this year that you may not have known before?
We've learned... Wow, that's a tough question. We've learned
lots.
A lot. I mean, we've learned to make it a year-round event, meaning in the planning process. Make sure that we're continually testing how this is going to work. Jeremy and I probably talk at least once a day via text or via phone or in person just about little ideas, and those little ideas just kind of stack on top of each other. I think we've also learned that it's a fluid thing, that we're creating something that is going to morph and change. So, whereas in the first year the music was maybe very stylized into a specific realm and then it grew, and this year it's expanding even more, to be comfortable with that growth, to be comfortable with this idea that it's not just going to be a singer-songwriter event, mm-hmm. That it's going to have a wider scope. We've also learned to probably be patient. We wanted to roll out our entire lineup announcement on March 18th, and we rolled out about 90% because there was some stuff in the works that kind of they take a little bit of time, and we learn not to pull our hair out because of that.
Yeah, and we've learned just in time to like fine tune all these little ideas and to make it this three-legged stool, and that people can absolutely get a grasp of it, attend all these events, see how it's going to roll out, so you're not missing anything, so you can fully enjoy the festival, and learn a lot. Patience.
Yeah. Patience, we've also learned that people got really excited about it. Last year, even though it was year two, it was really year one for this larger event for us. And so there was a lot of uncertainty. And we had a lot of people come to us during and after the fest say, you've got to do this again. And that was a learning lesson, to have people say, hey, we want this to happen. And so we feel like we're standing on a little bit more of solid structure to move forward. And we've talked to people and asked people questions and, sought advice from people that we know and trust to see, what should the festival look like and how should it grow.
And with that, the greatest compliment I heard last year was somebody said, thank you for showing us that Fayetteville needed this festival.
Yeah.
Not only did we not know it was here or that we were missing it, but thank you for bringing this and showing us that this is, institution and bringing this to Fayetteville.
Yeah, and that's what drives us in January, when we're kind of on the phone and trying to organize and make this happen. I think those type of comments and that feedback really has pushed us along.
You say 90% of the bill was released on Sunday.
Yes.
90%.
Yes.
So something to look forward to, Kyle. Something to look forward to.
Definitely something to look forward to.
And do you know when the other 10% will be announced, or is that pending?
It's pending some things that are out of our control.
Okay.
But, ideally, I would love to have it April 1. It might be April 15.
Okay.
Might be as late as May 1. Believe me, as soon as it's done, we want to get it out there and make sure that, the whole picture is out for the public to chew on.
And anyone who has any questions, the website is updated, right?
That's right. We've updated the website with the initial lineup. There's a nice little video on there that we did for promo with the Steel Wheels, kind of give you a taste of the festival. We also have a giveaway where the Steel Wheels donated their CD collection and a T-shirt and other stuff. So we have a giveaway on there right now. We don't have any ticket information or any kind of scheduling details, but that's really the point place for people to kind of access the fest at this point and get more information.
Jeremy, the restaurant business is not one that allows for a lot of free time, or that's at least my understanding. I've never been a restaurateur.
Fair assumption.
Okay, good. So when do you get the time between Greenhouse Grill stuff to work on this?
It pretty much all just rolls out the same time. These thoughts are just popping in, popping out. Here goes a text to Brian, write something down.
Right.
You just got to keep moving. There's multitasking to the extreme.
Yeah, I mean, every week there's either a text one way or the other from Jeremy or from myself that says something like, it's late or it's early and my wheels are turning, you know? and so we do a lot of early morning and late night kind of jam sessions talking about these things. And I think we both kind of have these hectic schedules, and that actually makes it a good fit. We both know that, you know, if it's 11:30 and we got to tackle something and we just both happen to be up, let's tackle it. Okay. And no one's offended or frustrated by that. But he's a busy man.
I get the feeling it's where you thought you wanted it to be a couple of years ago.
And then some, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you know, well, year one was just throwing something out there. You know, with this kind of idea that, hey, this could happen, but we just want to have a fun one-day event. But then as soon as that happened, we started to dream, you know, and think about it. And in some ways, I guess we sketched it out on paper, you know, and kind of had an idea of what this could look like year two, year three, year four. But, you know, it took getting through the event last year to kind of say, okay, year three that we sketched out could be possible, you know, and then so on and so forth. But it feels like it's in the right position right now. It feels like it's working in the way that we hoped that it would.
Jeremy Gothrop and Brian Hembree are organizers of the Fayetteville Roots Festival scheduled for August. This week, much of the 2012 lineup was announced.
It is Friday. It is March 23rd, 2012. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Ann Schneider-Hayden.
With us in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio, Becca Bacon-Martin, features editor at the Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
I want you to know that I interviewed Matthew Nelson the other day, Ricky Nelson's son, because they're coming to Alma
Nelson.
To the Performing Arts Center. Yes.
Yes.
And the first thing he did was tease me about my name.
Why?
Really?
It must be really fun to say fast.
I had not talked to him.
Huh.
We haven't talked to him.
Huh. That's not our fault.
Okay. It was very odd. Anyway, this segment is called Cool Things You Might Not Know.
Excellent.
You might already know that Circus Oz, an Australian troupe that combines live rock music with juggling and trapeze and clowning and strap performances and bicycles, is coming to the Walton Arts Center for 7 shows beginning Thursday. But did you know that there will be a special steampunk night on March 30th?
I didn't.
Oh, no. I have tickets for the 3rd.
Dang it.
Dang it.
You probably know that there are empty storefronts in the Garland Avenue.
Wait. In the interest of everyone listening to us, we've got to, before
we go
on.
We have to explain steampunk?
Two things.
Okay.
Oh.
They have strap artists?
It's like silks.
Oh, tissue people who spin from the ceiling.
Yeah.
Okay. Number two, some people may not know steampunk. Steampunk is this sort of style that is part H.G. Wells
and
Jules
Verne.
That
you and I are both too old to explain.
Well,
I can't explain it. So,
H.G. Wells, Jules Verne, Victoriana.
Right. Kind of think.
Because didn't you do at the paper? You had a
photo shoot. Yes, we did. And I love it.
Yeah.
I love the
steampunk
look.
I just don't know how to explain it. I see I'm like, yes, but I don't know how to explain it.
Okay. If you've been to Crystal Bridges, I'm sorry, I don't know the name of the piece or the artist, but if you've seen the piece, it's the guy and his wife and his two daughters. It's a portrait. And the girls all have weird, twisted hair. And the guy's looking right out at you.
Yes.
And he looks steampunk.
Right. So it's 1 foot in the Victorian age. And another sort of in that turn of century H.G. Wells science fiction age.
Mm-hmm. And that's
and then thrown in with a 21st century
twist.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's very much what the entire Circus Oz performance
right.
is
okay.
about.
Right.
But they are having a special steampunk night
okay.
on
sorry
the 30th.
Sorry to get you off topic there.
That's all right.
Okay.
Okay, so I was saying
yes.
that you probably know there are empty storefronts in the Garland Avenue retail spaces on campus.
Mm-hmm.
But did you know that several of them are currently filled with three-dimensional installations by UA art students?
We did.
There's a closing reception for them from 5 to 7 Thursday. The exhibit is called The Store, and we have a lovely set of pictures today in What's Up.
Yes.
You might know that NWACC students are raising money to travel to Haiti this summer.
Yes.
But did you know that Haiti Awareness Week starts Monday on campus and culminates with Soirée en Haiti from 5:30 to 9 on the 31st, an authentic Haitian dinner, music, poetry, and a chance to find out more about the trip to Haiti.
Mm-hmm.
And you can find out more by calling 619-2248 or 619-4149. You might have heard of the Wood Songs Old Time Radio Hour.
Public radio show that we don't carry, admittedly, but yes, I've heard of it.
Did you know that its founder, Michael Jonathan, will be in Arkansas?
Eureka, right?
For a concert at 7 Thursday at the Eureka Springs City Auditorium, and tickets are just $12.50.
Oh, that's affordable.
And he's also going to be doing the Woodsong Old Time Radio Hour on March 31st at the Reynolds Performance Hall at UCA.
Perfect.
You might know that longtime Eurekan Crescent Dragon Wagon has a new cookbook out.
All about
called Bean by Bean.
Yes, all about beans.
All about beans.
Really?
But did you know that she'll be in Arkansas?
At the Fayetteville Pub. No, at Nightbird, right?
At Nightbird Books on Wednesday at 7. But she'll be at Dairy Hollow, the Writers' Colony at Dairy Hollow.
Which has a direct lineage to her.
Yes, from 3 to 6 on Sunday for a tasting and book signing.
Perfect.
Choose one. One comes with food, one doesn't. You might know that Comic Stripped, an exhibit on Southern stereotypes and cartoons, ends Saturday at the Rogers Historical Museum.
But
did you know there's another exhibit on Arkansas stereotypes open at the Shiloh Museum in Springdale all year? That's the Arkansas exhibit.
Brooks Blevins.
Was the curator.
Right.
Is it just comic strips as well? Or is
it's
all stereotypes?
It's all sorts of stereotypes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. There's a lot of the advertising for Arkansas.
Oh, I see. Okay.
You know that some of it's like the old drunk hillbilly in the overalls with the moonshine jug, and some of it's the lovely cabin looking over the mountains. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Kids,
you know,
in bib overalls, yeah, things like that.
You might know that the Arkansas Music Pavilion has moved to the Washington County Fairgrounds in Fayetteville. But did you know that tickets went on sale today for Hank Williams Jr. on April 28th and Ted Nugent on June 10th?
Mm-hmm. Yes, I didn't. Yes.
And here's the biggest you might not know. You might know who Sarah Colonna is.
Yes.
Stand-up performer, actress, author of Life as I Blow It, which came out in February.
Right.
And hit number 5 on the New York Times bestseller list. But did you know she grew up in Farmington?
Yes, I did.
I did not.
I knew that, actually.
Wow.
I found that out randomly and was surprised that they haven't brought her back since she kind of has gained some more notoriety and stuff for her career.
Well, weirdly, she'll be here.
Yay!
At 8 o'clock on Thursday, she's going to do a stand-up show in the Verizon Ballroom at the Union on campus and sign books.
Cool.
And the event is free, and she says her teenage boyfriend, Bucky, is welcome to come get a book.
Excellent.
Yeah, I don't. Okay.
And if you want to know more about all these things, you can pick up What's Up Today in the Benton County Daily Record, the Rogers Morning News, the Springdale Morning News, and the Northwest Arkansas Times. Oh, and the Northwest Arkansas edition of the Democrat Gazette. I'm done now.
All right. Thank you, Becca.
Becca Bacon-Martin is features editor at Northwest Arkansas Newspapers.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. It is the last day of spring break for people who get such a thing. And with me in the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studios, Chaim Goodman-Strass. Are you having a good Friday so far?
I'm having a great time.
That's great. And with us again, first, Todd Taylor, who is working on his MFA in drama at the University of Arkansas.
That's right. Hey, Kyle.
And we'll be back with you in just a second, Todd. I'm a bit rude. We're going to tell you that the solution to last week's puzzle.
Yeah, in a couple of weeks. Next week,
okay.
I'm going to be at the Gathering for Gardner. And
okay.
Right. We'll Twitter from there, I expect.
Okay. So that's coming up in a couple of weeks, but we have not abandoned our math roots here.
Not at all.
Because Todd wrote a play that you saw on the University of Arkansas campus.
Right. On the Newton and Leibniz rivalry over the invention of calculus, which is a great play. I learned quite a bit watching it.
That's a high compliment. So what was the impetus for the play?
The impetus was my dad, who was a mathematician, now retired for 40 years at a small college in North Carolina where I'm from, actually wrote a play based on the calculus dispute, priority dispute, maybe 10 years ago. And he knew that I had had some training and was interested in drama and asked me to fix it, rewrite it. And I looked at it, and it was sort of the type of play that looked like it had been written by a math professor. In other words, it didn't.
Marvelous.
Well, it was full of great information, but it wasn't really dramatic. And so what I told him was, I'm convinced that this story, it could be a great play. I don't think I can fix yours. I'll write this play someday. And so then once I got into this program and had to start cranking out plays, I thought, okay, time to fulfill that promise. And so that's what I did.
So it's a fascinating story, but I bet many of our listeners really have no idea what it is. So in a nutshell.
Nutshell, okay. So we all know who Isaac Newton is. You may or may not know who Gottfried Leibniz is, who was sort of a superstar of philosophy in his own time. Newton being a very sort of strange bird and very secretive and reclusive, invented calculus and then didn't tell anybody. And then several years later, this guy in Germany, Gottfried Leibniz, independently invented calculus and said, hey, look what I've got. I've got calculus. And then Newton sort of came out of the shadows and said, no, I had that first. And it sort of simmered and didn't go anywhere for a while. And then there were counter-accusations. You stole it from me. I stole it from you. Anyway, it ends up getting hashed out in front of the Royal Society, which was sort of controlled by Newton as the president. Leibniz loses and ends up sort of on the scrap heap of history a little bit, even though his philosophy is still important as a rationalist. But, yeah, Newton's victory seemed very decisive and total at the time.
Newton was what we would now say a household name, right? At the time, he was kind of a superstar?
Absolutely. I mean, he by the time at the end of the play, his view of the physical universe sort of dominates at every university. He's just, you know, he's it.
And Leibniz at the time?
Leibniz was sort of the last rationalist to come from the school of Descartes, and he wasn't as fast as Newton to say, look, I'm just going to do the experiment, and I don't care what – I don't want to try to fit it into some theory. I'm going to start at the bottom, build the evidence, sort of the – and that's when the empiricists like Locke and those guys were starting to come on the scene, and the rationalism was sort of fading. I'm sorry, what was your question? It was about
Newton was this sort of, for lack of a better term, the rock star of the time, the well-known, and Leibniz was?
Leibniz, in his own time, was too.
Okay.
I mean, he invented a very impressive calculating machine that could add, subtract, multiply, and divide. He was also a real polymath. He had his fingers in, you know, studying biology and linguistics and just everything that you could name,
he
sort of had
that.
His finger in. Yeah. And so in his own time, he was very much celebrated. And then as the centuries passed, he sort of receded and Newton's prominence only grew. So,
well, Leibniz has some odd things that took a long time to come to fruition. Like he invented binary numbers, for example, which is pretty cool. So
yeah, and you were mentioning the theory of computation.
Yeah.
Some of those guys are starting to reevaluate his ideas. And one thing I did sort of fit into the play, they never met in person, Leibniz and Newton, which is an interesting facet of their confrontation. And at the end of the play, I actually sort of in a sort of dream sequence put them together and allow them to have that because that's what you can do in theater. But yeah, in their own time, they never met.
Huh. So what's the future? I mean, this was – now, Haim, you saw this. Was this a staged reading?
No.
It
was a fully realized production in Studio 404.
Okay.
So we had lighting design, which was important because it moves back and forth between these two worlds in Britain and in Germany and is a little hard to keep track of. I don't know. I'm still getting feedback on how well people are able to follow the way it moves through 50 years.
Oh,
I mean, it really
fine.
Spans a long time.
Yeah. I had no trouble. Oh, but also one of the centerpieces of the play, I have to say, is kind of amazing. It's an actual calculus lesson.
Really?
And that I was, you know, really impressed that all these sort of, you know, liberal arts majors seem to really be enjoying it and commenting afterwards about that, you know. So maybe it's the context, you know.
Yeah, that was one of the things I was most interested in getting feedback on. And there were, as you said, some liberal arts majors said, I don't like math, but I was able to follow it. I enjoyed that scene. I think some more people that were a little more reticent came up to me privately and said, you know, I got lost. I couldn't follow it, but I still stayed connected to the scene because I could sort of feel her excitement and the scene still worked for me even though I did get a little bit lost with the math. And that was something that I really wanted to get in there because I didn't want it to be just an abstraction. You know, it's hard to get people excited about, hey, he invented calculus. Well, what is it? I mean, it's just sort of an abstraction to me. And I really wanted to get a little bit of sort of what it does, what it is, without having a full-fledged calculus lesson. But
because you are having to serve sort of two masters here artistically. You have to – the math has to be right.
Or the history.
Or the three maybe, math, the history, but you also have an audience.
Yeah, and they're the most important master,
right,
really.
Right.
And so, yeah, so that was sort of a little bit of a tricky line to walk. In my conception, I wanted to use projection so that everything Leibniz writes while he's sort of showing Caroline would get projected and you would have the visual, which makes it so much easier for people to follow. We couldn't get that in this sort of limited space of 404, but Esteban, our director, Esteban Arevalo Ibanez, he came up with the idea of using sort of sidewalk chalk and then drawing it on the big concrete black wall of the back wall of the theater. And
nice.
to get it as large as we possibly could.
Well, you even had the grid from the bricks, the cinder blocks.
Yeah, he incorporated the grid from the cinder blocks, right. Yeah. And I thought that was really ingenious and really effective because I don't without any visual component, that text is just going to sort of fall flat, I think.
And then, of course, there is the other element here is that you're taking your father's original work and trying to do, I don't know, justice or to make it shine and make yourself proud in his eyes, right?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was part of it, and it's so different from he as a professor, and I had to sort of fight against this, the urge to get in everything. There's so much sort of interesting stuff. Newton was master of the mint and actually presided over guys that were like found guilty of coin clippings. He went to every execution and was sort of – that's like this whole – but you can't fit in everything, you know.
Right.
And I think that's sort of what happened to his play a little bit. And so you have to make choices. There were a lot of really interesting things about both Leibniz and Newton that I couldn't get in.
What happens to the play now?
Well, I'm going to take what I learned, and I learned quite a bit from watching it myself, what parts worked, what didn't, the audience feedback, discussions like this one, and I'm going to sort of tune it up and try to make a better draft of it, and then I just start submitting it. I mean, my ideal scenario would be something like the Timeline Theater in Chicago, which produces a lot of historical plays. But I'm hoping that it can find a home in some sort of regional or college theater setting. I think it's a play that has a future. So
that's great.
Yeah.
Has your dad seen it?
He has. He came up from Raleigh and
saw.
They weren't going to miss it. They stay right in the Dixon Street Inn and made sort of a weekend out of it. My dad's actually from Arkansas. I'm from North Carolina, but he's from Morrilton. Mm-hmm. And so I have some relatives here in the area.
Really?
They came up and made a sort of weekend of it. And it was a real thrill for him.
So
and it was
at least
a thrill
two.
For me, too.
There's a John Stallings, who's a very famous mathematician, is also from Morrilton. So I guess it's cranking them out.
I guess so.
The Devil Dogs, you know.
The Devil Dogs, that's
yes,
right. Wow.
Morrilton Devil Dogs.
Wow,
yes.
That is that's good breadth of knowledge there.
Or something. And when are you done here?
I am midway through the second year of a 3-year program, so I'm just about at the halfway point.
Thank you both so much.
Thank you, Kyle, and I guess I'll see you in a couple of weeks.
Right, have fun at the Gathering for Gardner.
Right, at Math Factor.
There you go. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Ace Macrahita.
With us is Shane Bergen, who is a reporter for the Springdale Morning News. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Very good. We've asked you to come in because you have a story that's running this weekend in the paper that we thought was worth a bit of forward promotion, a bit of
yes.
Discussion. And it is about
Padrísimo's Discotheque.
That's right. The Hispanic-based discotheque, kind of dance hall-type nightclub and bar out in Tawnytown. The story is about a fight between the bar and the city of Tawnytown. They are suing the city of Tawnytown for $2.8 million. The city is countersuing them, trying to close them down as a public nuisance. This goes to trial April 17th, Washington County Circuit Court. Both sides have pledged to kind of drain this out over the course of a year or so of appeals, no matter which way it goes, though. But, you know, what we delve into with this story is, you know, Padrísimo has been going through some legal problems out there. A lot of arrests. The city pulled their business license back in December. But they've kept carrying out their business.
Can you do that?
You can.
It
is a $500 fine every day that you're open without your business license. But they can pay it. because they make a lot of money. and also, from what I understand, they just started receiving citations on that, and those may not even be valid until really after whatever the result of the April trial is. Basically, the beef going on here is that we have the Washington County Sheriff's Office. They regularly have, you know, two or three police cars just kind of hanging out in the parking lot each Saturday night. Padrissimo is only open on Saturday nights. So they'll have a couple of police cars in the parking lot watching to see if anything's going wrong. And oftentimes there will be arrests ranging from public intoxication to public urination. But vast majority are public intoxication. We have Padrissimo management feels like the police are picking on them a little bit. And so the story kind of delves into that relationship there between Padrissimo Discotheque, the police, and the city of Taneytown.
When you have a story like this where it's city versus a business, were you able to talk to people from both the city and the business?
Oh, absolutely.
They're
absolutely
both willing to talk and get their side out there?
For the most part, yes. So we have the mayor of Taneytown, Tommy Granata, is featured in the story. We have Padrissimo management and some Padrissimo patrons. Padrissimo is a very popular place. People come from, you know, Joplin and Tulsa to go there. It's you know, Hispanic based, so it's very kind of commingling. Everybody comes there to dance and have a good time. Very big place, you know, 15,000 square feet, kind of isolated in the corner of Taneytown there, though. And so they have, you know, different types of music, things like that. And
oh, so they're at the risk of sounding like someone who's solely hasn't been to a discotheque for a while. They have different areas, like different dance floors
inside.
Right. They
have
like a mall of dancing.
Right. They have three separate dance floors.
Okay. So it's a busy place.
Very busy, about 900 patrons each Saturday night.
Wow. And you say there's a chance this could, through legal actions, go on for
a while?
Could be going on for several months, no matter what happens in the April trial. Each side's lawyers have said, if we lose, we're going to drag this out.
Okay. Well, while they're dragging it out, can it still be in operation? I mean, I know the business permit, they don't have their business license, but they've still been doing it. So, I mean,
yeah, I mean they're still operating. They're going to keep operating on appeal if they mm-hmm. lose in April.
So this will be in Sunday's paper.
Right.
All right. We'll look forward to that. Shane, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Friday. It's the 23rd of March, 2012. It was on this day, 1775, a lawyer named Patrick Henry spoke at the Second Virginia Convention in Richmond. George Washington, Thomas Jefferson were both there. The debate was over whether or not to raise a militia and arm Virginia to fight against the British. And Patrick Henry delivered the line, "Give me liberty or give me death." At least some people thought he did. But it wasn't until 1816 that it was written down by his biographer, who talked to people who'd been there. It's the birthday of Kim Stanley Robinson, born in Waukegan, Illinois, 1952, science fiction writer, author of the Orange County Trilogy, author of stories set on Pluto and Mercury, stories in the past and the future, on the slopes of the Himalayas, on the ice of Antarctica. It's the birthday of the French author Roger Martin de Gaulle, born in Neuilly-sur-Seine, France, in 1881, who chronicled the fictional Thibault family in a series of novels, Les Thibault, considered a roman fleuve, a French term that means river novel, a series of novels written by one author about the same few characters, a saga where the historical backdrop plays a prominent role in the fiction. It's the birthday of Louis Adamek, born in what is now Slovenia, 1899, emigrated to this country at the age of 14, author of many books about immigrant life in America, the labor movement, travel. Louis Adamek, who said, "My grandfather always said that living is like licking honey off a thorn." And it's the birthday of Fanny Merritt Farmer, born Boston, 1857, known for publishing the first cookbook in American history that came with simple, precise cooking instructions, also offered advice on how to set a table and scald milk and remove stains and clean a copper boiler. Here's a poem for today by Carl Dennis entitled To Happiness. If you're not approaching, I hope at least you're off to comfort someone who needs you more, not lost or wandering aimlessly or drawn to the shelter of well-lit rooms where people assume you've arrived already. If you're coming this way, send me the details, the name of the ship, the port it leaves from, so I can be down on the dock to help you unload your valises, your trunks and boxes, and stow them in the big van I'll have rented. I'd like this to be no weekend stay where a single change of clothes is sufficient. Bring clothes for all seasons, enough to fill a closet, and instead of a single book for the bedside table, bring boxes of all your favorites. I'll be eager to clear half my shelves to make room, eager to read any titles you recommend. If we've many in common, feel free to suggest. They prove my disposition isn't to blame for your long absence. Just some problems of attitude, a few bad habits you'll help me set to one side. We can start at dinner, which you're welcome to cook for us while I sweep and straighten and set the table. Then light the candles you've brought from afar for the occasion. Light them and fill the room I supposed I knew with a glow that shows me I was mistaken. Then help me decide if I'm still the person I was or someone else, someone who always believed in you and imagined no good reasons for your delay. To Happiness, a poem by Carl Dennis, from his collection Unknown Friends, published by Penguin and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation. iPad users can download the three most recent issues of Poetry Magazine, celebrating its centennial in 2012, at poetryfoundation.org. And by the Mosaic Foundation of Rita and Peter Hayden, based in Ann Arbor, honoring the literary arts and the universe of great ideas. Written by Betsy Allister, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
KUAF is supported by our contributing listeners and by Malco Theaters, offering birthday parties, special events, and group rates for individuals and businesses. More information available on the web at malco.com. And from Dr. Charles A. White Periodontics and Dental Implants, a regional practice offering periodontal care to new and existing patients for over 25 years. Information regarding appointments and consultation, gum grafting, computer-guided dental implants, and minimally invasive laser therapy available at drcawhite.com.
This is KUAF 91.3 FM, Fayetteville, Rogers, Fort Smith, Wheeler.
And this is kind of a dreary day, kind of cloudy. It was raining slightly a little bit earlier.
It's kind of a dreary week.
It has been a dreary week, especially if you look at my basketball brackets.
They're not bad.
I'm in third place out of three.
Well, sort of.
You lead.
Yeah, I think I do, actually. Your NIT men's bracket just got obliterated.
Well, I don't think I'm going to hang my head too much in shame when I say I didn't know the men's NIT very well.
Well, neither did I, but I seem to have made a good selection in Stanford because so far so good. You picked Miami, who lost pretty quickly.
Well, I also picked Missouri to go to the Final Four in the men's NCAAs. Speaking of the men's NCAAs, you, Ithy, and I all have brackets, and she's in second. She's ahead of me, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's fantastic.
I mean, it depends on how you're scoring it, but our quick scoring, I would say yes. Like one. Like right. By one selection or whatever. I think, let's see, I have three of my four Final Four left.
Well, that's great. And so by the time you and I get back together on the show on Tuesday, we'll know exactly who's where. This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums.
I'm Antoinette Gray.